Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio. Thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate it. It's Farmer Friday. I would love to hear from you. If you've got any questions, anything you would like to talk about on your farm, you can reach me here at the Ag PhD Morton studio at 844-442-4743. That's 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can send me an email, radio@agphd.com. I've already been getting a lot of those emails in today, and I'm going to get to those in the Ag PhD mailbag here shortly. You can also find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, or Brian Hefty. So I just wanted to let you know we do have a number of AgPhD workshops that are coming up. On Monday, I'm going to be down in Gilbert, Arizona. Both Darren and I will. Love to have you attend that free AgPhD workshop down there. The name of the workshop is entitled 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses Today. And we talk about that because both Darren and I have been agronomists for over 25 years now, and I just have to say, that's the most popular question we get from farmers is, hey, how do I cut my expenses? Now, granted, there are more important things than cutting expenses, all right? Ultimately, we want to make money. We want to do a good job for the land and the environment. And so still, when we as farmers are talking about things, we're usually talking ultimately about these expenses and how do I cut those. So anyway, that is our topic at this workshop that we are doing on Monday in Gilbert, Arizona. On January 29th, we'll be in Granite Falls, Minnesota. January 30th, we'll be in Nebraska and also in Kansas. February 5th in Idaho. February 6th in Washington State, and 6th and 7th. I should also mention on February 6th, I'm going to be doing an Ag PhD Soils Clinic right across the border in Lethbridge, Alberta, Canada. Love to have you join me there. That one's going to be a little bit different on time. Most of our workshops we run starting in the morning and ending in the afternoon. The one in Lethbridge, Alberta on February 6th is 9 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. We also have some workshops coming up later on in the season. February 19th, Secrets of High Yield Fields. And then March 5th through the 7th, Neil Kinsey will be here at Baltic. So all these workshops you can pre-register for at agphd.com. All of our AgPhD workshops are free for you. We do them as a way to say thank you for watching AgPhD and listening to us here on AgPhD Radio. For Neil Kinsey, for his seminar, that one does cost a little bit of money. That's his seminar rather than ours, but we are hosting him because he's fantastic. If you've never heard Neil Kinsey before, I can promise you, you will absolutely enjoy it. I would also invite you to check out the Ag PhD Insider magazine. You can subscribe to that at agphdinsider.com. I've got lots of good information in there for you, and not only do you hear from Darren and me, you hear from high-yield farmers. I know the last edition we had Neil Kinsey with an article. We had David Hewla with an article, Randy Dowdy. We also have a lot of things that you might see on Ag PhD TV, or at least the segments. So things like Iron Talk, Weed of the Week. But we have a number of guest writers who are participating in the Ag PhD Insider magazine. So you not only hear from Darren and me, but you hear from a lot of other great authors, great farmers, great agronomists as well. So again, that's agphdinsider.com. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag right now.
It's the mailbag!
All right, this first one comes from Patrick. He says, Brian, Darren, and staff, just wanted to drop you a note thanking you folks for putting on the wonderful workshops Monday and Tuesday that you had in Baltic at your field day site. Everything was first class from the moment you walk in to registering the printed booklets to the meals and, of course, the presentation of the subject matter. Really appreciate that. Also, having your agronomist available to visit with as well was very valuable. I'm a huge fan of the back-to-back meetings, as it's really nice for those who have to travel a few miles, and I look forward to the pair of workshops in Baltic in February and, of course, the event with Neil Kinsey in March. Thanks again. That's from Patrick. Well, thank you, Patrick. Appreciate that. Here's another one about workshops. This one comes from JW. He says, Hi, I attended your workshop in Bloomington, Illinois just a couple days ago. I noticed in your handout there was no sample chemical programs for corn and soybeans. You guys have typically done that in the past. Do you have anything for 2019? No, JW, we do not. We decided not to put those in this year because there continue to be more and more choices. Think about soybeans, for example. You've got potentially enlist now. Liberty, there's Roundup trait, there's conventional, there's extend. I mean, it's a lot of choices. So what we did instead during the workshop is we kind of talked through what we suggest for pre-emerge herbicides, and then we talked a little about the post choices, and we did that in corn and soybeans. So no, we don't have anything exactly like we've done before, but that's kind of what we did. And if you have more questions and any specific questions for corn or soybeans, just certainly send us an email back or give us a call anytime, and we're more than happy to talk to you about that. Next one is from Gordon. He says, hi, I just came across a statistic that I thought you guys would be interested in since you're from South Dakota. Apparently, South Dakota in 2017 had the highest birth rate in the United States, and District of Columbia had the lowest birth rate. That's there may be some joke in that statistic. I just don't know what it is, but I'm sure it's a good one. Just something for you guys to think about on this cold winter day. Take care, and I hope your families are in good health and good spirits. Again, that's from Gordon. Gordon, thanks for the interesting stat. I have no idea how that could possibly tie into agriculture, but maybe we got a bunch of young farmers on the way. All right, next one is from John. And he says, hi, I liked your topic about raising conventional corn that you guys talked about recently on Ag PhD TV. I'm in a low-yield environment where hybrids usually don't reach their maximum potential. It would be interesting to see how an $18 per acre corn seed would cash flow versus a $100 per acre corn seed, both having cover crops in them. Look, John, I think about that on a pretty regular basis, too. I want to make sure that whatever we're investing in on the farm is making us money. Now, when you start talking about this, let's just take just as an example. Okay, we got $18 versus $100. So you're talking $82. How many more bushels would we have to have? Okay, roughly, let's call it 25 more bushels. Okay, is it going to yield 25 bushels more to plant something that is really a really good new hybrid versus bin run seed that we pull out of the bin? You know, in a lot of areas, it's going to make a lot of difference. And we talk so much about the other things you can do, even when you don't have a lot of rainfall, we got to try to build that soil up and have good yields. So right after this, we've got a couple segments coming up that we did in Bloomington, Illinois. I know you're going to enjoy them. Stay tuned.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic is proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation. And patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
All right, and we are back in Bloomington, Illinois today. We are talking with our audience after an Ag PhD workshop here. Got a little bit of time left for some questions, so if you've got a question, please just raise your hand and we will get to you. If you can, just give us your first name and the state that you're from and then ask your question. That'd be fantastic. Go ahead, sir.
I'm Bob from Illinois.
Yep.
And
I recently was reading an article, possibly even in your magazine.
Well, then it must be right. Anyway, go ahead.
With the suggestion that the, where we're lacking from getting to the 60 bushel range beans we're in now.
Yep.
Here, to get over 100, that we're going to need to add nitrogen.
Oh, okay. So nitrogen
and
on soybeans.
That mind, does that mean side dress beans?
It's very possible that you may need to side dress your beans if you are after big time yields. The big thing that I would tell you, what we've seen over the years is if you have good levels of organic matter in your soil, then usually that releases a lot of nitrogen over the course of the growing season. We figure here in Illinois, we're gonna release at a minimum probably 20 pounds for every 1% of organic matter, and some years it's higher than that. So if you have 5% organic matter, that's 100 pounds. But I just pulled this up on the screen for any of you that are here, and this is in your book too. Glenn, maybe you can look up what page number this is in the book. But anyway, I've got this up on the screen. Did you know that 100 bushel soybeans need 435 pounds of nitrogen? That's a crazy amount, isn't it? We're lucky because if we've got good soil conditions, then the plant can produce a lot of its nitrogen on its own. Yeah, this is on page 14 in your book. But the point is simply this. It might not be able to produce enough nitrogen when we start getting up to the highest yield levels, and especially if you've got low organic matter soil. So that's probably the number one factor. Low organic matter soil, and then it's only really with the high yields. So you can try some things out on your farm. I would just say here in Illinois, I seriously doubt for anybody who's only getting 60 or 70 bushel beans that they're gonna need to add more nitrogen. But if you wanna get up to that 90, 100, 120 bushel kind of range, which we're gonna get there someday, right? You may need to be adding some nitrogen. Now you have to ask yourself too, when does the plant need its nitrogen? There are charts out there. So you can look at some of the charts, whether it's from Iowa State or, you know, a number of other universities out there. They've got charts on when that nitrogen is needed in the plant. So we just have to make sure it's there when the plant needs it. So generally speaking, I would tell a guy, I'd probably be thinking about maybe ammonium sulfate early in the season, or you could side dress a liquid 28% or something like that, maybe around flowering time or a little bit after. What do you think, Glenn?
Right. Another thing that we started to do is just simply a feed grade urea. Put that in with your foliar feeding to get some on there. But I'm to Brian's point.
Well, yeah, foliar feeding. Let's talk real quick about foliar feeding versus putting stuff in the soil. Foliar feeding, we can only put a few nutrients on or we burn the crop. Yep. And we're only going to change what's in the plant for maybe a week or two. Okay, if we need a lot of nitrogen for the next 2 months or a month and a half or whatever, that's not going to cut it. Now, if we were specialty crop growers and we had thousands of dollars an acre invested, that we could potentially get back, I don't mind going and spraying every week. We can't really afford that in corn and soybeans and wheat. We got to figure out how do we put it on the soil and have enough there for 45 to maybe 60 days. But yes, we do believe that you're going to need some nitrogen, especially as your yield levels get way up there. And you know, a lot of people are talking about that besides just us. All right, let's go to the next question. Yep, we are right over there. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Brian. My name's Ben. I'm from Illinois. After listening to you for a few years, I decided to make a resolution this year to pull regular tissue tests.
Yep.
And I guess I'm wondering, at what growth stage do you start doing that, and when do you finish? And then I was a little disheartened after hearing you yesterday and today talking about Randy Dowdy and not knowing what those results are. So to finish that up, what do I do with those results after I have them?
Okay. First of all, I commend you for getting tissue test data. That's really, really good. Even if we don't necessarily know exactly what the data means today, having the data is important. Because now we know what those levels were and basically what your yields have been and things like that. And we can start to learn from that. You can start to learn from that. And even if we don't know exactly, we do start to get some ideas. Like I will just tell you on our farm, when we first started pulling tissue samples probably over 15 years ago now, we were putting a lot of nitrogen on mini crops, okay? Like corn and wheat, for example. And what we found is we needed to put a lot more stuff on the nitrogen. Okay, we were deficient, and I mean just terrible on potassium, boron, and zinc week after week after week. Now, whether it's that means we're deficient for 100 bushel corn, 200, 300, whatever, I don't care. It just signaled to me, boy, my comparatively to all these other nutrients, my potassium, boron, and zinc were awful. We started addressing potassium, boron, and zinc, cutting nitrogen back, and our yields started going up. We didn't have to spend any more dollars, and our yields started going up. So that part is good. You know, we just want to be able to have the data. Now you ask about when should I start the testing. With grass crops, we want to start about right away. So just about as soon as the corn or the wheat is out of the ground, we want to be sampling. If it's soybeans, you can start sampling then. A lot of these high yield guys are. Glenn does on his research plots. But honestly, I don't know that it makes all that much difference. The beans don't seem to take crazy amounts of nutrients early in the year. So if we're talking today about cutting costs, I would say maybe do your tissue sampling starting 3-4 weeks after planting. Start right before flowering, something like that, and you're probably going to be okay. Because the vast majority of nutrients that go into that plant occur after flowering. Thanks, good question. All right, yep, we got another one back there. Go ahead, sir.
I'm David from Illinois. Yep. My question has to do with building sulfur in the soil. So we've gotten our soil tests and sulfur levels are low,
okay.
But our pH is adequate, you know, in the sixes.
Okay.
So we've been putting 10 pounds of elemental sulfur down in the fall and incorporating it, but then also putting thiosol in the spring with our pre-plant to get some readily available sulfur.
Yep.
So my question is, putting 10 pounds of elemental sulfur down, how much will that lower our pH, and is there a better way to build sulfur in our
And you
soil?
Said 10 pounds, correct?
Correct.
Okay, 10 pounds isn't going to do diddly squat. Nope. So in terms of lowering pH. So I wouldn't worry about that at all.
You're basically putting about 8 elemental pounds on there.
Yeah, so you're fine as far as that goes. And elemental sulfur, some people like it because it releases very slowly over time. So, you know, you've got some a little while later. But let me just ask you this question. Do you think about building long-term nitrogen levels in your soil? I don't. How are you going to build long-term nitrogen levels in your soil? You can't because it's leachable. Sulfate is about half as leachable as what nitrogen is, or nitrate is. So when we think about building sulfate levels, like where we farm, and I've got heavier soil, and I have some years not a whole lot of rain, we can actually build sulfur levels. If you're going to build sulfur levels here in, let's say, medium textured soil, maybe even heavy, but with all the rainfall that you get, that tells me that you probably have a drainage issue. The sulfur should be getting away, but it's not with all the water that goes. So I'm not all that worried about it, but what I would encourage you to do is just take a look at how many total pounds of that nutrient do you need. So I just threw that up on the screen here too. I've got 300 bushel corn. Just as an example on 300 bushel corn, it's going to take 45 pounds of sulfur. 45. Okay, that's a fair amount of sulfur. So you got to look at, okay, the organic matter is going to have some. I probably have some carryover in the soil. That's good. And then you have to look at all your sources you might apply. So for us, we use some manure. We use some compost. We use maybe a little lime that's got some sulfur. There are a lot of things, a lot of ways you can get sulfur onto that crop. But for the two you mentioned, you're just running with very low rates. So you're not, number one, going to build because you aren't even putting on as much as the crop is going to use. And number two, when you start thinking about overall yield, you might be ahead to either try different sources or certainly different rates. I'm not that worried if, let's say, you go from 10 pounds to 20 pounds of elemental sulfur, you're not going to change that pH much at all. No real big deal. You're fine with what you're doing. I'm just trying to tell you, if you start going for bigger yields, you got to have more sulfur. So we will get back to more of your questions coming up right after this.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts: the Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm in the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions. Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
All right, we are back here in Bloomington, Illinois, having a lot of fun today with our crowd, just answering questions right after our Ag PhD workshop that we did here, 101 ways to cut expenses on the farm today. So I'm with Glenn Herz, he is our Ag PhD research lead, and let's get back to our questions. We've got our next one coming up right here. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Brian, I want to thank you for a fine meeting here today in Norman, Illinois.
My you bet. Name is- thank you.
Greg, and I live right around here, too, so
perfect.
Appreciate it. Anhydrous ammonia is a popular end source for us from this part of the country, especially applied in the fall, and I haven't heard you, didn't notice anything about anhydrous use, or what's your opinion on that, fall or spring, or stay away from it completely?
Okay, in terms of anhydrous, first of all, I like anhydrous. We would probably still be using anhydrous on our farm. We haven't now for the last 3 years because the cost went way up because most dealers out our way have gotten out of it. Okay, and then the regulatory side has gotten to be much tighter, and so it's just raised costs. So when I analyze that, I go, man, I get urea quite a bit cheaper than I can anhydrous. Well, why would I do anhydrous in the fall? We're already busy enough in the fall. We'll just go with some anhydrous in the spring, and then we'll come along with some side dress later. But I have no problem with anhydrous. Some people will talk about, oh, it's gonna kill stuff in the soil. You think about running a shank every 30 inches and just having a little point, yes, you probably will kill a little bit of stuff in a tiny, tiny, tiny area of soil for a little while, okay? When Francis Childs first was raising 400 plus bushel corn in Iowa years ago, 20 years ago, he was using a lot of anhydrous.
And I'm like, you know, if a guy can raise 400 bushel corn with anhydrous, it must not be too bad. So I don't have a big problem with it. I do have a problem with it in the spring, though, in most cases, because by the time the ground dries up enough so you can get your shank down there and get it to seal up nice, you probably should have been planting a week or two earlier. And for me, planting early really, really, really pays. So I got to get that done. And anhydrous in the spring for us is just out. We've never done it. I don't plan to do it because I can't get the ground to seal up. Now, if I was way far south, and maybe for you, you have a super dry spring and everything works out great, you're dry and warm, awesome. For us, unfortunately, it rarely works out that way. And that's my number one fear, is that guys try to use it and then they lose it, smear the soil, create compaction issues, all those kinds of things. So we have to be a little bit careful with it, but otherwise, yeah, I have no issue with anhydrous ammonia. It's fine. All right, next question. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it looked like all these plots had 8,000 gallon of dairy manure.
Yeah.
What is the analysis at 8,000 gallon?
For that dairy manure that we were getting, usually, and I'm just thinking off the top of my head here, yeah, we didn't put all the information in there. We also have tissue tests, we have soil tests, we have all kinds of data on that. So I'll just ballpark it for you. Roughly for first year availability, 18 pounds of nitrogen for every 1,000 gallons, about 7 pounds of phosphorus and 18 pounds of K2O potassium. So that's roughly what you're getting. And yes, it was just a blanket application. We'd actually done this on that full field that was there. And Glenn and I talked about this a little bit and we said, well, just have them run over this stuff too. Okay, and we'll just give this a shot of manure once. It hasn't had manure on it in 10 years, so let's just go ahead and do that. And I realize it's gonna raise the cost for a lot of these guys, but many of the high yield farmers talk about manure, chicken litter, you know, all these types of things. We thought, yeah, that's fine. Let's just do this to long-term build up the soil. All right, let's see, where is our next question? Yep, where are we at here? Oh. not quite there yet. Yes, we're only running with one microphone today instead of the two that we normally have, so we're a little slow. All right, go ahead there, sir.
Larry from Central Illinois. I was wondering, on your irrigated plots, are you applying fertility through your water in the season?
Normally for irrigation, we encourage people to put on fertilizer through the pivot. With our stuff, it's so small, and we are doing different plots within that we are not putting it on that way. But like I say, you know, as a normal farmer, as a normal practice, we absolutely would, but because of changing stuff up every few rows, it just doesn't work.
Right. Where these plots are, they're only 12 rows wide, so 30 feet. The lateral runs the other direction across them. So if I was going to put on something for one guy, they would all be getting it put on. So we don't have the capability. And then this year, we were so wet, the only time I actually watered was when we applied some product, and then to rain it in, basically, we applied it. So we put four tents on. After that, it's rained every single day since, you know, or every time we needed to. So we never did irrigate a whole lot.
All right, let's go to the next question.
Hi, my name is Chris Clockengay from Illinois. I see in a lot of your corn trials that you've done, you guys have done many passes with a Y drop or with additional nitrogen.
Yep.
I just was wondering if you might be able to speak to, just on a broader scale, like a one Y drop pass versus multiple, and where do you kind of find it to be good?
Yes, excellent question. You know, basically it's how often should you be applying side dress type fertilizer? That really varies depending on rainfall and depending on your soil, and obviously, of course, your yield goal. So where we start whenever we talk about nitrogen is this. You've got to look at your cation exchange capacity. In other words, how much can your soil hold at any one time? So what we'll use for a figure, just to give you a rough ballpark, is take your cation exchange capacity times 10. So let's say that you had a cation exchange capacity of 15. You multiply that times 10, your soil can hold roughly 150 pounds. Okay, like for these guys, oh, and you saw the average yield in our high yield plots there on our farm was 300 bushels. Okay, is 150 pounds of nitrogen gonna cut it for 300 bushel corn? I've got it up on the screen, we need 336 pounds. Now, granted, we've got some carryover nitrogen, we've got some coming out of the soil organic matter, so let's just say we're going to apply 250 pounds, okay? Well, the most I want to get out there in one shot is 150, but if let's say that I split it up entirely, I went 125 in one shot and I went 125 in another shot, I could theoretically do it in a couple of shots. I get concerned about the weather also. In Illinois, it's a lot different than in South Dakota. In Illinois, we find a lot of people are able to put fertilizer on, many different fertilizer products, whether it's nitrogen or sulfur, boron, or in some cases even potassium that doesn't move super well in soils, and they can get that into the plant fairly quickly. For us in South Dakota, we might not have rain this month. And that's no joke. We very often will go a month with no rain. And so if we put the fertilizer on and we don't get the rainfall, well, then it's just sitting there. We start to lose some. And eventually when it rains, okay, now it gets in, but now I might have missed the window and I lost some of my yield potential. So you see where I'm going with this. In a drier climate with heavier soils like what I have, then I want to get that make sure I have the nitrogen out as early as I can possibly do it and the soil will still hold it. For you here, you might be ahead because you say, well, boy, sometimes we get 6 inches of rain in a couple of days. I don't know that I want to take that risk of putting 125 pounds out in one shot for me, and I'm in Illinois, I might want to split it, and I might want to run two passes with the Y drop instead of just one like I might do in South Dakota. So, you know, if you can pay attention to what the weather is going to do, you look at what your soil is, all those types of things, that's kind of what we're after.
Another thing that they were doing this year, and it was because of the dairy manure that we used, so we didn't really put any nitrogen up front, and when some of these tissue samples started to show on the low end, they got worried. There's not enough nitrogen coming forward yet out of that manure that we had applied.
Yeah, that is one of the things too that I will say in terms of manure that we've learned in some cases the hard way. You usually can trust the test, but you can't always trust the test necessarily for what's going to be available first year, because again, it does depend on heat. And where we farm and we're really cold, like this morning, it was 4 degrees back home and it was 32 degrees here this morning. So when we're really cold, and we're cold in the fall, we're cold in the spring, then the stuff doesn't come available as quickly. So we just have to be real cautious about that. All right, stay tuned. You are listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
We started utilizing the DuoReact system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips so you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit soilwarrior.com to learn more.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, back in the Morton studio. With what you just heard in the last couple of segments, I just wanted to tell you kind of what happened again. I was in Bloomington, Illinois a couple days ago doing an Ag PhD workshop. Glenn Herz was with me. He's our Ag PhD research lead. And anyway, we had a fantastic crowd, probably 600 farmers there. It was a lot of fun. And what we do at most workshops is we do a live radio show right afterwards. So for example, in Gilbert, Arizona on Monday, we will do a live radio show from there to wrap things up. Well, on Wednesday, we had Darren and Rob Fritz were in Rochester, Minnesota, so they did the live show. And we, in Bloomington, Illinois, recorded a couple of segments after the workshop was done, simply because we get so many questions from the audience all the time right after our workshops that we just think that makes for kind of interesting radio. Just some of the questions that we get are awesome. We really appreciate that. And we would love to hear from you anytime, whether it's at a workshop or like today. If you'd like to call in, this is Farmer Friday. So we are getting to your questions all throughout the show. If you have anything you would like to ask or just talk about from your farm, love to visit with you. 844-44-AG-PHD. That number again is 844-442-4743. Or you can send me an email, radio@agphd.com. So continuing on with your questions, this one comes from Brandon up in North Dakota, and he says, I want to know more about Tapera Plus. It's not a product that I'm real familiar with, but I understand it is bifenthrin, and it's a strobe, this fluoxystrobin. So what is that? Why do I need it? And why should I put it on early in the season as opposed to either putting nothing on or just putting bifenthrin on? Okay, so Brandon, first of all, what we're looking at here is Evito fungicide. That is a strobe that would be somewhat similar to Headline, same chemical family. And bifenthrin, that would be like Capture LFR, for example. Now, with this Tapera Plus, that is not an FMC product. That is sold by another company. And it's a combination of bifenthrin insecticide and this fluoxystrobin or Evito fungicide. Now, normally, when we're going to put fungicide and insecticide together, that becomes very problematic at planting time. Where I'm going with this is if you think about trying to mix bifenthrin and any strobe or any fungicide with the planter, that just doesn't work very well. We have a lot of mixing issues. So if we're talking about at planting time, you know, then I'm not real big on that. Now, we think about what this product is going to get used for and what it's labeled for. The intent is thinking about it obviously at planting time. In part, I think about, could something like this be used post-emerge? Because maybe I need some insecticide, maybe I need some fungicide. So, you know, there are all those other things, and you can certainly look on the label and see when these products are labeled for use. And if it is labeled for use post-emerge, maybe it ends up fitting you. But, and by the way, it is labeled for post-emerge use in multiple different crops. But you specifically asked here about corn and soybeans and putting this down in corn and soybeans. So why would we want this fluoxystrobin? Why would we want something like Evito? We have found very good plant health benefits by putting fungicide down, especially in corn, when the conditions are cold. Now, being from North Dakota, I'm sure you're more than familiar with cold soils. In our research, we have found that by putting a strobe down, we've typically done Headline, but we have done some work with this exact product with the fluoxystrobin or Evito fungicide. It actually can help us just with overall plant health and protection against some more diseases. So it is a part of our early corn planting strategy that we visit about all the time on Ag PhD TV, radio, and even at many of our workshops. So that's what I would say. You're going to get some plant health benefits, some additional disease protection, and you need that, and it seems to pay when you are planting into very cold soils. Now, if you're planting later and conditions are warm, then it seems like, and certainly in our research it has shown, it does not pay nearly as well. All right, let's go to the next question. This one is from Randy. He says, I was just wondering how much anhydrous to knife in if your CEC is 8 to 11. Now, I've been putting on 150 pounds of actual N pre-plant with N-Serve. Am I putting too much on, or will the plant use it as needed without losing it over the growing season? Or should I put like 100 pounds of actual on and come back later and spread another 100 pounds over the top? Randy, our standard rule is 10 times the CEC. So if you've got, let's just say on the high side even, 11 for CEC times 10, that's 110 pounds of nitrogen, is about the most your soil can hold at any one time. Let's just say we've got 20 pounds carryover out there. That means that we would tell you, throw like 90 pounds on and we'd feel safe. Now, can you push it a little bit when you put some N-Serve with it? Sure you can. But the question is, how much rain are you going to get, and how long is it going to be until that corn needs its nitrogen? So when you say pre-plant, well, for us pre-plant, we plant really early, and very often it's 3 weeks before the corn even emerges, at least two, okay, and it's, you know, over a month before the corn's going to use hardly any nitrogen. So I'm just trying to say that gives us a whole month where we have to be worried about rain and losing that nitrogen. So if it's me, no way am I going to put 150 pounds on. I would cut that back some, even with the N-Serve. I just feel like you're taking a lot of risk. We have enough risk on the farm already. Why push it? All right, next one comes from Ryan in Kansas. He says, hi guys, I have a field with an area that has a pH of 5.7 and a buffered pH of 6.4. Now, most of the rest of the field is closer to 7. My question is, would you lime that part of the field? And if so, what would you target for the pH and buffered pH? Perhaps more generally, below what pH or buffered pH or both should a guy be looking to put lime on? The soil test for the field is attached. And by the way, he says here, I've learned a lot from your show over time. Thanks for all the help you provide. Well, first of all, Ryan, my number one question for you is, how big are these zones or grids? Yes, I have your soil tests here, and I can see you've got one spot of 5.7, another spot of 5.8. Don't worry so much about the buffer index. The buffer index is simply so we can make lime recommendations. All we really care about is the soil pH. We want that a little bit higher for most crops. So that's my next question is, what crops are we talking about? If we're talking corn, soybeans, and wheat, ideally at a minimum, we want to be at least 6. A lot of times we say 6.3 or so, but I feel pretty comfortable at least if we're at 6. So we're pretty darn close. If you're at 5.7 or 5.8, I'm going to do a little bit of liming. And I'm going to recommend a little bit of liming if we're talking corn, soybeans, and wheat. But again, I want to come back to how big is that area. Let me give you an example. Let's say that you're talking about a 10-acre grid here. Is it 5.7 pH over that entire acre grid in every square foot? And your answer is probably, well, I'm not really sure. Maybe. I think it is. I doubt it. So, and the reason why I bring this up, and I'm not trying to give you a hard time or say your soil testing is bad or anything like that, but what I'm going to tell you about is how we have over-limed on our farm and it's cost us yield. We took soil pHs like you have in the fives, and we brought them in some cases all the way up into the mid sevens. And I can show you on our yield maps where when we're at mid sevens, as opposed to when we're at mid sixes, it's costing us 50 bushels of corn. 50 bushels of corn plus the fact that now I want to get the pH down, so now I'm using a little elemental sulfur to quickly do that, as opposed to just letting things take their natural course and it happening in 10 years. I want it to happen right away because I don't want any more 50 bushel losses. So now I basically have lost yield, and I have to spend money on elemental sulfur, and I overspent on lime in the first place. So here's what I would suggest you do. In those two spots, the one that says 5.7, the other that says 5.8, I would take 1 acre grids just in those spots. So let's say it was a 5 acre grid or a 10 acre grid. I would break that up into 1 acre grids just in that area and then find out, where do I actually need the lime? And absolutely, I want you to lime, but I just am so fearful of you over-liming and overspending that I'm not very comfortable with what you've sent me. Now, if every one of your tests that you showed me are all down in the fives, then I'm not so worried about this, okay? But what you've sent me is most of your pHs are great. So I'm concerned that in some of these grids or zones where you're saying it's 5.7 or 5.8, maybe in some of those areas, we don't need any lime. We can save the money just by investing a little more in soil testing. Well, stay tuned. We've got more of your questions coming up right after this on Ag PhD Radio.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio here on a Farmer Friday. If you want to call in, got a little time left, 844-44-AG-PHD. Otherwise, I'm going to continue with questions. I have so many that we've gotten in. It's awesome. Really appreciate the questions. If you would like to send a question in, radio@agphd.com. All right, this next one comes from Randy. He says, hi, guys. Hi, Brian and Darren. I farm 115 acres. I primarily work off the farm. And so I can't afford the newer equipment like you guys use. I was just wondering if my older planter can be expected to raise 200 bushel corn. My first answer here, Randy, is absolutely it can. He says, with his planter, he does have some precision planting upgrades, but it still isn't planting very good. And I hear you guys talk about down pressure systems. Yes, Randy, I would encourage you to check that out. So, you know, when you talk about farming small acres, you really have to monitor what your expenses are, and hopefully you can do some of the work yourself. But there are a lot of inexpensive used small planters that you can get, and you can put new parts on them or put, you know, things like precision planting on them. You know, and if you're only talking a 4-row, 6-row planter or something like that, it's really not that much money. Anyway, he says the next thing here is I fight with my fertilizer dealers to try to address the micronutrients that show up deficient on my soil tests. Do you have any advice on how to find someone in my area that will sell me the products I need to address those issues and not just try and sell me the same old N, P, and K? Randy, you just have to call around. You just have to talk to enough people. You will find somebody who's good, somebody who you can work with, and somebody who will sell you whatever micronutrients you want. But yes, unfortunately, there are a lot of companies out there who just talk about N, P, and K. And believe me, I get it. It's much more efficient for a business to have fewer SKUs, fewer products that they're selling. So that's why some of the companies do that. Next one here. Let's see, and I don't have a name on this, but the farmer is just asking about running ESN in furrow at a higher rate and if there's any benefit to that. There's no possible chance that for me, I'm going to be putting nitrogen in furrow. Now, granted, if it was some tiny little bit, if it's a half a pound, then I don't care. But no, we don't want to run ESN in furrow. Now, using it 2x2, using it broadcast, something like that, that's fine. With the ESN, basically, we're talking about controlled release nitrogen, and I have no issue with controlled release nitrogen in most cases. Now, where I get concerned about controlled release nitrogen is if I was in season and I need the nitrogen today. So you have to be a little bit careful about how you're using the product, but you're talking about using it at planting time. I'm fine with using it at planting time. I just would not use it in furrow. I worry about too much salt getting down there. All right. Let's see. I've got so many questions. I'm going to try to get to as many as I can here yet today. All right, this one comes from Anthony, who says, on your fertilizer removal app, I was looking at peas as a vegetable crop. It displays bushels. I usually talk about tons. And he's got that for another, for sweet corn also, same type of thing. Yes, you may have to do some conversions with our apps. So if you've got very specific questions, just ask us and we can visit with you more about that. But also, we get our information. We work together with the International Plant Nutrition Institute for the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. I really encourage you to use that. Anyone who is listening today, download the free Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. It's awesome. I use it almost every day. I use it all the time when we're talking about making fertility recommendations. You have to know what does your crop actually need before you start putting together a fertility program. So I get it. But yes, I mean, you may have to do some conversions. It's not that tough, and you can search real quick on the internet to convert things. If we've got it in bushels, you can convert it to pounds or tons, maybe ears, that type of thing. So absolutely, you can do it. You can use our app. You might just have to convert it if you are using a different unit of measure. All right, next one is from Matthew. He says, hi, guys. I'm interested in the Neil Kinsey workshop. I just have a question. I see the workshop's prepaid. And in terms of deadline for registration, is there a deadline? Because what I'm worried about is I might not be able to attend, and I didn't know if I could get a refund or not. So, Matthew, no, we don't have refunds if you can't attend, in part because with the registration for the workshop, you get Neil's book for free, which is that's worth actually quite a bit of money. If you've never read Hands on Agronomy, it's amazing. It's the best book I've ever read in agriculture. So you get that for free when you register and pay to attend his seminar. I'll also tell you, with Neil Kinsey's workshops, a lot of times he charges $1,000 a piece to come to his workshop. Well, for this one that he's going to host here at our farm, at the Ag PhD Field Day site in March, it's only $150. And that includes his book and all the meals. for 3 days. It's a three-day seminar. You will learn a tremendous amount. Love to have you there. Next one is from Robert. He says, hi guys, I missed the Rochester workshop and none of the rest of them are anywhere close. Can we view this recorded at some point? Robert, we don't record these, and I'll tell you why. I was just visiting with some of our people about this morning. When we do Ag PhD TV, really when we do anything, we want the production quality to be great. We want you, when you watch our TV show, to go, wow, I learned a lot there. I liked the graphics. I liked the animations. I liked the video. I liked how everything tied together. The sound quality was good. The look of it was good. Everything was HD quality. That was awesome. The lighting was great. You name it. Well, the problem is with the different venues we're in, yes, as a live event, we hope that we are putting on fantastic shows. But in terms of seeing those on TV or even just online, the quality just isn't the same. And, you know, you may have even heard just our sound quality that now we're putting on radio for those couple of radio segments I did in Bloomington just a little bit ago. It's just not up to our standards. So that's the reason why we don't put these things out there. I would really encourage you, take a day off, spend it with us at Baltic. Actually, we've got a back-to-back workshops coming up, the 101 Ways to Cut Expenses on the Farm and Secrets of High Yield Fields. You will love both of those. It will absolutely be worth your time. But I realize you're going to have to take some time and come all the way to Baltic, but you will definitely enjoy it. All right, next one here is from Luana, and we were talking about on Ag PhD TV, why are some rows of corn still in the field? Well, one of the reasons they give here is insurance companies require it if you're filing a loss or cutting your crop for silage, and I absolutely agree. That is one of the ones we didn't mention. We did talk about things like people leave just a little bit out there for a windbreak, to catch snow. Also, sometimes people like to feed the animals that are out there, the deer and that type of thing. So anyway, a lot of different reasons that you might have for leaving some rows out in the field. Next one here is from Rob. He says, I attended your fertilizer clinic on Tuesday. I was wondering how much 20 inches of rain over the 30-year average will affect the readings on a soil test. Well, Rob, it could have affected a little bit. Yes, it could. But, you know, overall, I'm not that worried about it. You know, you've got to continue soil testing whether your soils are a little wet or a little dry. You're going to be fine. Just understand when you get excessive rain, that usually means more leaching. So this year, it seems like we're seeing a lot less nitrate in the soil. We're seeing a little less sulfate, boron, those types of leachables. In terms of the ones that don't move much, like phosphorus, even potassium to some degree, zinc, those really haven't changed compared to what they normally would. But it's nice having this information because some years we go into the spring going, wow, we had lots of carryover nitrate. I'm glad we knew that. Well, this year we don't have much carryover nitrate. I'm glad we know that. His next thing here is he says, we've been ridge tilling since 1984, and our thought on changing soil pH is Pell lime. We think it's the most effective use of lime with the minimum tillage. Well, Rob, it may fit in your area. What we tell people all the time is there are a lot of sources of lime. There's ag lime. There's water treatment lime. There are lots of sources. Check into all of them. Find out the cost. Check the ECCE and just compare them all and find out what's the most efficient, effective for you. Every area varies because with lime, trucking is really the key. If you can get the trucking done cheap, usually then that works out great for you. And, you know, the other big factor that we're always talking about, rather than just price, is what's the fineness? That's where we get to the ECCE. We've got all these factors like fineness, purity, moisture, that type of thing. All right, last one. I'll get to this quick. This comes from Tom and Nate. They say they've had some poor success trying to raise K levels. They have CECs around 10. They put on as much as 1,000 to 1,400 pounds in spots, and it's not raising their tests. So what could be wrong? And they said they recently watched some stuff on Neil Kinsey, and he said that in high pH soils, it's hard to build your K levels. Well, Tom and Nate, we have actually been able to build our K levels in high pH soils with commercial fertilizer. But yes, maybe it's you need to use compost or manure. I'd really like to see your soil test, though. If you wouldn't mind, send me your soil tests, and I'll see if I can get you a better answer on what exactly is going on there. Well, before we go, I just want to say thanks to our production staff, thanks to everyone who wrote in with questions today, and thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio, and now stay tuned for Shark Farmer Radio.